This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is a composer and musician and expert in digital processing. He's done brilliant work on the issues of video fakery at the World Trade Center, and today we're going to explore his latest research. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Ace Baker. Ace, I'm really happy to have you back.
Well, it's always good to be back, Emma. Thanks for having me on.
Tell me where we should go. I know how well prepared you are for our interviews, so I presume you want to take me someplace, all of us, to go on the Internet, and we can discuss it.
Well, let's hit acebaker.blogspot.com. I started a little blog there, so acebaker.blogspot.com.
Okay.
If you can pull up my blog.
I'm there.
So, I've made a few notes here now. I have to say I'm uploading something that I thought would have been uploaded by now. I've just edited together a new study and a new piece on Chopper 5 that I think is real interesting. Unfortunately, I uploaded it to YouTube. It's processing right now. I'll bet it will be ready for, if not the second segment, then maybe the third segment.
That's fine.
I was hoping to have that going.
That's just fine.
But I have in my notes here, if I can step away from 9/11 a little tiny bit.
Yes.
Talk about some Apollo video fakery.
Okay.
I'm becoming quite suspicious about the whole Apollo thing, too. I was in New York City a few weeks ago and went to the Museum of Natural History, and they've got a big Apollo section there with some huge photographs from the moon. And I, just looking at the photos from the moon, I'm just struck at how much like a movie set they look like. And they had one very large picture. I forget which mission it was, but when I studied the horizon, you see lunar hills across the whole background, and then you see the foreground lunar scape receding into towards the background. But there's a very definite line across in between where that background is and where where the foreground ends, and you can look all the way across it from left to right, and there's a line. It looks very much those.
So you got the flat stage, and then you got the background that's perpendicular to it, but they're trying to create the illusion that it's actually in the distance.
And I think it was probably huge, but a huge soundstage basically. And so as with 9/11, I start thinking about this, and the way I go about thinking about it is I think, well, okay, if I was trying to do this, if I was trying to make fake videos of a moon landing, how would I do it? What problems would I have? How would I do it? What problems would I have? And I haven't written anything about this yet or really studied it, but I have run across a document that I found on a NASA site about the television system that they use. And one of the problems, there's a few problems that I would have if I was trying to make fake video. One is light. You would need the hugest, biggest, brightest one single source of light to try to imitate the sun. And another problem would be the dust, trying to get dust to look like there's no air. You'd need some kind of something really dense. I think they might have used polymer dust or something for that. But I think one of the biggest problems that I would have is with motion in general. Of course, there's no air on the moon, and there's 1/6 gravity. So things will fall differently, but it's not a linear relationship between how things would fall on the moon versus how they fall here on Earth. It's 1/2 GT squared is the amount of time that it takes something, but it's not like just 1/6, like you could slow things down film something on Earth and then just slow it down and have it be exactly right. If you did that, it would be a little too fast in the beginning and a little too slow at the end of something falling. It wouldn't be exact. If you drop something from like 5 feet, it ends up being very close to about half. For something to fall down on the moon, it's close to about half speed. But again, it's not exactly just slowing, the film down to half speed. It would be close to right, but it would be, again, it would be a little too fast in the beginning and a little too slow at the end. Not exactly a linear relationship. So started thinking, what would I do to try to cover that? Because when I look at these moon videos, they look like slow motion to me. They don't look like motion on the moon. I mean, things would fall slowly, but if you, say, moved your arm around, that would not go in slow motion, and a lot of things just simply look like slow motion. What I would want to do if I was trying to keep the secret is I would want to somehow screw up the timing of the videos in some sort of subtle way that would still, look basically right to people watching on television, but if somebody like Ace Baker came along 30-some years later and wanted to look at things frame by frame and make very exact measurements, kind of like what I was doing with the 9/11 videos, to try to see if it matches, gravity, half-speed gravity on Earth, or whether it really matches 1/6 real gravity on the moon, that he would encounter some weird, intractable problem. So the document that I found, it's called Apollo Color Television Subsystem Operation and Training Manual, 1 June 1971. And I think this system started with the second moon mission, Apollo 12. Apollo 11, they used black and white, like 10 frames per second, some kind of a weird custom, and then it was just really, really bad quality. So forget that whole mission. But starting with the second mission, they used color television, but it was not standard color television camera that they had available at that day. They built this really funny custom camera that was actually a black and white camera that then had a color wheel added on to it. So you have this spinning disc as a red, a green, and a blue filter that's spinning around and it records one field of red and then a field of green and then a field of blue. And let me, I'll read now from this.
Ace, would this enable you to filter out stuff that shouldn't be there?
Well, what it ends up doing is that it, I can read from this, but by doing it that way, there is a delay that has to be introduced to, like in this frame, the red might have to be delayed a little bit, and then in the next one, the green delayed.
Okay. Stand by. We'll be right back. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, Ace Baker. Stand by. My special guest today, Ace Baker, and I are discussing at the moment indications he's found that some videos of the Apollo moon landing and so forth may have been fabricated. Ace, I got to say, ever since I saw the combination of the motion picture Capricorn 1 and the video entitled Conspiracy Theory, Did Man Go to the Moon, I've been very open-minded about the possibility that the whole moon landing business was a political charade.
Yeah, I think, I'm sure wanted to. I mean, it's completely different than 9/11 in that was something great. Then they may very well have really wanted to do it, and it might have been one of those where Kennedy sort of promised we were going to do it, and then Kennedy is killed for whatever reason, and the guys come to Lyndon Johnson or whoever and say, we'd really like to do this, but we got some real problems.
Like the Van Allen radiation belt, for example.
is certainly one of them, and I just, the whole lunar lander.
Yeah, they couldn't handle that lunar lander in the stronger Earth gravitational field. How could they figure it would work flawlessly in the moon gravitational field, which is so much weaker?
And, you know, the whole business about the, of course, you know, when you see the lunar lander blasting off from the legs, there's no exhaust. There's no rock flame coming out of the bottom. And, of course, it's alleged that it's, I forget what the name of this particular rocket fuel is, but supposedly there's some rocket fuel that burns perfectly clear.
Right. This is like the invisible planes that crash into buildings and disappear completely.
It's kind of like that, you know.
You know, we get lied so much to Ace, it's astounding how stupid and gullible we become.
You know, and it's one of those, whereas 9/11 was something that was so horrible that most people can't believe it. Apollo was something so wonderful that people can't not believe it. You know, it's in a way,
yeah,
because I think they faked it, but in a way it is, it's opposite, you know. Right. So I was, again, you know, thinking about what problems I'd have, and I found this old document about this strange kind of color television that they made, because I was thinking, well, I would love to get my hands on those videos, on broadcast quality Apollo videos from the moon, and make measurements of things falling, of things, you know, of the dust falling or whatever, when they do the feather and the hammer trick, which, by the way, is, you know, supposed to prove, you know, that gravity's working and that there's no air, but it would have been a lot more convincing had they dropped a hammer and like a little piece of paper. You know, a feather, you could, first of all, I mean, you could easily fake a feather. You make a metal feather and paint it up, or a concrete feather or something. A little piece of paper, boy, there's no way to make that fall straight to the ground if there's air around. But anyway, this color TV, this black and white camera that they then put a color wheel on to extract color information, the bottom line, again, I read this document, the bottom line is that whereas a real color television camera, the red, the green, and the blue information are all captured simultaneously at the same time, and they're all arrive at the same time, because of how they did this, the red, the green, and the blue were captured at different times, and they had to, in order to convert that into a standard television signal, they had to delay bits of information frame by frame by frame. And in this frame, it might have to be the red, which was delayed a half a line, and in the next one it might be have to be the green, and in this one it might have to be the blue. And they had to build this really elaborate decoder thing on Earth that decoded this special signal. And it was all supposedly broadcast back from the moon and recorded on tape as magnetic signals on tape, that then was turned into a television signal. And then, of course, mysteriously, I'm to understand that these original tapes where all this data originally got recorded, of course, those are missed and nobody knows where they are. Point being, if I was to now go back and try to make precise measurements of how things were falling, how things were moving, I would first have to somehow try to pull the color signal apart into red, green, and blue. Then, on a frame-by-frame basis, I'd have to figure out which one of those three colors was the one they delayed on that frame, and then move it earlier in time. I'm starting to get to where I'm not exactly sure how you would figure out, you know, which one it is, and it gives a perfect arguing point if you ever want to say, hey, the motion of this is much more consistent with half-speed film on Earth than it is with 1/6 gravity on the moon. They'll have a perfect argument. Well, you don't know, you know, exactly about the speed because of all these little weird delays that were built into this television.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we lost the original tape anyway.
So it was a mechanism of obfuscation.
It could very well be. I do have to say, in doing it that way, they do gain the advantage of being able to broadcast a lower bandwidth signal. So, you know, I have to say that there is a technical reason they could broadcast a color signal with with less bandwidth than a real color signal. But I mean, the mere fact that they didn't take, I mean, boy, if I was really going to the moon, first thing I'd say is, man, you got to shoot some film. I mean, some motion picture film. It's bulky. You wouldn't, necessarily be able to bring a lot of it, but certainly you would bring some 35 millimeter, even Super 8 film is more beautiful and it's higher resolution than television is. And you're going to the moon. Certainly we can, we can shoot some actual film, and. Another one of the things with Apollo, of course, there's no stars in any of the pictures. Now, of course, the argument for that is, well, it's very bright on the moon, and so the lens apertures were set down, and that makes perfect sense. If you are shooting something very bright, then dim things like stars might not show up very well. However, again, if I was really going to the moon, I would want to take pictures of the stars. Remember, there was no Hubble Space Telescope.
Right.
No space shuttle. That
right.
was the most amazing opportunity.
And if I'd been to the moon, you couldn't get me to stop talking about it, and these astronauts were strangely reluctant to even discuss it. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Ace Baker. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guest today is a musician and a composer and expert on digital processing, Ace Baker. At the moment, we're talking about possible video fakery related to the Apollo landings. Go on, Ace.
Well, enough of that. I would really like to get in and study that some more. You put it all together, I'm pretty sure they didn't go, which bums me out because, I was just one of the, one of the greatest achievements of mankind. But, it's we got to value the truth and try to get to where the entire concept of truth is passe.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. And this administration is just stunning in that regard.
So we're at acebaker.blogspot.com. So that video that I was uploading has propagated. You might need to hit reload on that page. And when you do, you'll scroll down a little bit and past my notes on Apollo, and it says Chopper 5, proof positive of video compositing. And I've made a little video. And I'll go ahead and hit play on that and just sort of talk through it and describe what we're seeing. And
is the video, the little video, the one to the side there below Blown to Kingdom Come?
No, it should be just on Dynamic Duo 227087.
Okay, I see it. 9/11 Amateur Part 3 New?
Nope. Hang on. That's down in Segment 2. Make sure you're in segment one. You'll have to hit reload.
Oh, yeah, sure. Refresh. Got it.
Reload your page.
I'm doing it. Yeah, I see it now.
Okay, so there's Chopper 5. So I'm
going to
play and I'll tell you what we're doing here, what we're seeing.
Okay, tell me. I'll start together with you, yeah.
Okay, all right. I'm going to hit it right about one, two, go, pretty much.
Got it.
So it's
as you look at the picture from up.
We could listen to him. It just plays the way it did. That was the Fox 5 guy. Now, so here I'm replaying it. The first thing we see is that we're not arriving at the scene. We're out over New Jersey somewhere, but there's no plane in this wide shot. Look at the distance that the plane travels between some different frames. I've numbered the frames, which you can see in the lower right-hand corner, and between frame 407 and 423, it travels a particular distance. That's 16 frames. So then I match up the scales. You can see I've matched the scale between the wide shot and the other shot, and we measure out 26 times that distance. 26 times 16 is 416 frames, so therefore, in 416 frames, the plane would cover 26 that distance, which does not run off the screen. So therefore, the plane should be there. Now, we can run the film forward to frame 170, and by then, that's more than 5 seconds later, the plane would be well inside the picture. Well, some have suggested that maybe the plane is hiding in the smoke, but here we see another angle from CBS where we can clearly see that the alleged plane's path is nowhere near that smoke. I mean, the smoke is going way off to the southeast, and the plane is coming in from the southwest, and there's just simply no plane in that wide shot to be seen at all. So we can run it forward, and the next strange thing is the miracle zoom. He zooms in, the camera zooms in some more, and then zooms in that last bit, and what I'm showing here is that within 1/15th of a second of that final zoom is exactly when the nose of the plane enters the screen. And that is quite a coincidence if we're to believe the official story, but it's a necessity for compositing. And, of course, we've got this nose out. And they accidentally let the nose of the fake airplane pop out the backside. So here I'm going to do a little video compositing 101. Here is an airplane that I recorded landing at Burbank Airport, and run it back and forth here a few times. So the next step is I remove the background, so we just have an airplane on a transparent screen, so you can see that airplane going back and forth. I choose a foreground. Here's a 9/11 video of towers burning from CNN. So we overlay the plane, and it composites in there, but the problem is it appears to go in front of the towers. So we need to create a layer mask. Here I'm adjusting controls on the layer mask. You see the background goes black. And so now I've figured out, taught the computer where the towers are and where they're not. So I can apply that to the airplane. That makes the airplane now appear to go behind the towers. I noticed that the plane maybe is a little too clear. So here I'm applying motion blur, adjusting the controls on the motion blur. Now we count down, and we're ready for the final performance here. And you can see the plane will enter and just pass behind the towers. Now we've got to fade to black quickly, because if we don't, then what might happen is, whoops, the nose of the airplane can pop out from behind the layer mask. I let it pop out there from behind my layer mask like it did. So here again is Chopper 5. They let the nose pop out, and I have showed that can be the problem if you accidentally let the plane run too long, or you forget to fade to black.
Beautiful work, Ace. And, of course, remember, they got millions of dollars to play with, all, of course, U.S. taxpayer money.
Money's no object. You know, it's all taxpayer money, and even easier than that. They literally, since 1913, they can just print it up out of the blue. It's money truly is no object. So, I had created a number of questions for people, whether supporters of the official story or 9/11 truthers who think there were real planes, a number of questions about planes that I think would have simple answers if there were real planes, and I so far haven't really gotten any answers to them. I'm open to talk and listen to anybody that wants to try to answer some of this stuff, but whether or not there's a plane in the wide shot is a pretty simple, straightforward question, and the question is, should the plane really be in that wide shot? And I used one method to estimate where the plane should be at the beginning of that wide shot. And now I haven't included it in this video yet, but I've come up with a second method to try to determine where the plane should be. And that other method is in good agreement with this first method, and actually plots the plane even being a little further inside the picture even than this one.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Ace Baker. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guest today, Ace Baker, is a composer, musician, expert in digital processing. We're talking about some of the videos on 9/11. Ace, where do you want to continue?
Yeah, so just one of the simplest things, is there a plane in that wide shot? And there's not, so then should there be? Suggested that, well, maybe it's there, but it's hiding in the smoke. And I think I've shown that that it's nowhere near that smoke plume that was coming from Tower 1. Shown one method of trying to estimate where that plane would be, but a different method is to figure out that from the northwest corner of Tower 1 to the southeast corner of Tower 2 is about 691 feet, and according to government reports, that plane was going about 542 miles an hour, which is like 795 feet per second. We know that 416 frames of video is 13.9 seconds. So we can figure out that the plane would go we can multiply 13.9 times 795 feet, so it would go 11,035 feet between those two frames, between frame 7 and frame 423. So you do the division, and it's about 16 times the width of those towers, the combined distance between the edges of those towers, and when you plot out the spread between those two towers, it does not come close to running off the edge of the screen. And so that's where the plane should be. It's well inside the edge of the tower, and it's not there. So then, well, you might think, well, maybe the plane's there, but it's just too small to see. I haven't posted it yet, but I have gone, shot video at LAX, or near about 5 miles from LAX, or what I think are very, very similar. That is shooting almost directly through the sun, clear day, and you get that haze that makes the sky look almost white, which is almost exactly like what it looked like from that Chopper 5, shooting right towards the sun into that haze. And I was further away shooting these planes from 5 miles away with, just a camcorder. And those little planes they're small, they're little blips, but they're always there.
Why don't we go to segment two?
Say what?
Segment two. You got set up here for segment two?
Right. Now, so this is about just trying to correct some errors. Social Service is the guy who made the September clues. He's come
right
out with a bunch of new stuff. I don't know that we need to watch this. I've posted his 9/11 Amateur Part 3 new, and he's talking about the Evan Fairbanks video in that, which is surely a video composite. And he correctly points out there's no sound on the video, which is pretty suspicious. But there's also this reflection. I've talked about the reflection before on your show. There's windshield of a car down near the bottom of the see the tower reflected, and then you see the plane reflected in that. Well, what Social Service is trying to say is that we should not even see the towers in the reflection, and that it must be a fake because we would never see those towers or the plane or anything in that reflection. And that's just wrong. And he suggests, hey, go try it yourself. And I did. I went outside and I looked in my Jeep and I looked in the windshield, and when I get down pretty low to the ground, which this video was shot from from pretty low to the ground, well, by golly, I can see behind my car. That is where you see. And there's no way that they would put a reflection in a windshield that didn't belong there. I think what happened was the reflection of the towers was already in that windshield, so they had to put the reflection of the plane into the windshield. But once again, there's been just a number of points where this guy, social service, Simon Shack, it's like he's playing for the right team, but he somehow just seems to get it wrong. Like he was talking about the layer masking and why the nose popped out the back side, but was talking about a layer mask that was static. In other words, it didn't move. It was just a rectangle drawn on the screen, and that the helicopter must have drifted, which it did drift, and then that's why the mask was then out of place. But then people have, like Anthony Lawson and I, have come along and corrected him and said, well, wait a minute now. If this was just a rectangle-shaped mask drawn on the screen, yeah, the left edge of that mask would be out of place, but so would the right edge. In other words, then the plane wouldn't look like it disappeared behind the leading edge. That end of it would be messed up too, which that end of it was not messed up.
So is your take that this guy's sincere but not very competent, or possibly not sincere and not too clever by introducing discrediting examples that can later be used to discredit the whole thing?
Right. I'm just going to try to correct things and let others figure out, you know, intentional or unintentional, whatever. But there's been a few of those, and I just, you know, in fact, I have a blog entry, you know, correcting mistakes and including my own. And my attitude, you know, is certainly that, I'm not infallible. I make mistakes, and I want them, you know, pointed out. If somebody can make a comment, that's what I want. It's all about good spirited, scientific, rational argument.
Yes.
You know, but this, you know, I've been real suspicious about this reflection in the windshield of the Evan Fairbanks video. Now, I thought, and this might be one where my memory's not serving right, but I thought a couple years ago I saw a version of Fairbanks where the reflection of that airplane looked like it was really straight. And, of course, the windshield of a car is curved, and so the reflections are curved, and the path of an airplane reflected would be curved. Now, this version that Social Service has, and I've found it on the archives also now, finally found a version of Fairbanks. It's curved, so it actually looks right. Now, that, you know, it's quite possible to warp and curve an image that was formerly straight. So it's not like this couldn't be faked. You absolutely can. But I got to go look, because I know that I have a version of that video saved somewhere, and I haven't gone and looked for it on old hard drives. But I'm just really curious, because, you know, maybe I just remember wrong and it was always curved and they did it right in the first place, or maybe they put that thing in straight and then fixed it later. My memory says that plane was in there straight, and that's what caught my eye before. And then for a long time, I couldn't find any versions that showed the reflection. They cropped out of certain versions of it, and then they covered it up with logo graphics and other versions of Fairbanks.
In the JFK case, you know, if they discovered evidence that was wrong, they would make a later substitution.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Ace Baker. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest is Ace Baker, a producer, composer, expert on digital processing. We're talking about issues related to video fakery on 9/11. Ace, where would you like to continue?
So let's go to acebaker.blogspot.com, and we'll look for Dynamic Duo Segment 3. You can either just scroll down to it, or in the right-hand margin, there should be a link for Dynamic Duo, the date 227.08, and Segment 3.
Yeah, I'm there.
And let's we'll hit that. And so we got to talk about the Hutchison effect. Of course, there's been in the news lately, so to speak, with regard to 9/11. And let me.
I'll mention for our audience, by the way, that we're going to have Hutchison himself and Judy Wood on tomorrow to talk about all this. So if this whets your appetite, you want to be sure to tune in tomorrow for further discussion.
And, so let me just say that there are a lot of disciplines that are relevant to 9/11. And while nuclear physics and quantum mechanics are not my areas of expertise, video fakery is. So let's have a look at this YouTube video. I've edited together some of the Hutchison effect videos that I've found. So I'll just hit play, and part one is called Stuff Wiggles.
Do you want to count down?
And or falls up. So we're looking at there's a carton of juice that falls upwards. There's a wrench.
Should we count down to start them to play at the same time?
I'll back up. I'm sorry. Yeah, let me do that. Okay, so we're ready to go. Like 3, 2, 1, go.
Got it.
Call it part one.
Yep.
And or falls up.
Right.
So, yeah, there's like a... Here we see a juice carton that sort of falls upwards. Then we've got this adjustable wrench going upwards. Here's like a bent pencil. Like it's just gravity. It's wiggling around. You'd think it would roll over and land on its side, but it's kind of wiggling there, and that seems very strange. Like it's defying gravity somehow. It looks very, very interesting. Here's a little cup. I can't tell if it's glass or metal, but there's some kind of goop in there that's falling upwards. Again, it's bulging up, appears to be defying gravity, and it's bulging upwards there and sort of falling up. It's very interesting. Here we have some kind of a metal box that looks like it's on the floor, and it's perched on a pointed edge, and again, appears to be violently wiggling around, defying gravity. There's a 7-Up. Hand that falls up, more pliers that fall up, look like an ashtray that falls up. So this is very interesting, strange stuff here. So let's scroll down to the next video. There you can see there's, I think, the reference frame or whatever they call it. There's like there's me juggling, and in the foreground here we have this little...
Should we start it at the same time?
So let's we'll do a countdown.
Yep.
A little YouTube video here. This is anti-gravity goop.
Right.
3. You ready?
Yeah.
2, 1, go.
Got it.
This should be real quick. A little goop. Yeah, well, there's audio, but we don't need it. And the goop is falling upwards. There's me in the background. I'm juggling. I actually screw up here, and I was trying to bounce the ball. Whoa, I actually kind of dropped it. But then,
but the goop went up.
The goop went up. So this is my way of doing a little one-upsmanship on Hutchison's videos, and at the same time pointing out something that's missing from his video, and that is a reference of which way's up and which way's down. In my video, of course, I'm juggling.
Yeah.
It would be quite impossible to juggle upside down. My hair would be going the wrong way, for one.
Yeah.
The balls would behave the way that they do, but it's my not-so-subtle way of the Hutchison videos. Which way's up and which way's down. We'll scroll down and we'll watch one more of my videos. Tesla's dancing screw, and then I'll talk about what these are actually doing. Ready to go on Tesla's dancing screw. This you maybe and turn your audio up. There's like a little brief techno music. So if you got your audio, maybe you'll
hear.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
Hiya.
So that's a little mirror in the background.
Okay, enough of that. So I imagine we're coming pretty close up onto the break. Is that right? I don't know.
Well, we got another minute and a half.
Another minute or so.
Yeah.
So these videos I've made here, and we'll look at another one later in the next segment. I'll start by saying I have not discovered any strange energy effects of any kind. They're, in fact, video fakery. They are the foregrounds with the little house that you see with the floor and the mirror and the little furniture and whatever else I had put in there are upside down. I shot them upside down and actually held things in place with a magnet on the back side, on the underneath side where you can't see it, but I was just holding it with my hand. So, for example, that screw appears to be dancing around and wiggling around and so forth. It's actually hanging upside down from what would be like the ceiling, and I'm wiggling it around with a magnet on the back side, so I'm able to make it do all sorts of crazy things. And, of course, then when I pull the magnet away, it falls down. But now we're looking at the whole video upside down, so of course it falls up. Same thing with that little paper cup full of honey. It was, I got it cold, so it wasn't super runny, but I put a little chunk of steel in the bottom side of that cup so that I could then hold on to it with a magnet from the other side, and then eventually, you know, the honey was falling, dripping down, so it looks like it's dripping up. And then I pull the magnet away from the back side, and then the whole thing falls down. So
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Ace Baker. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today my special guest is Ace Baker, and we're on his site, acebaker.blogspot.com, and we've been looking at some videos related to the Hutchison effect or something like it. And am I to infer, Ace, that you're a bit skeptical about the Hutchison effect?
I'd have to say so, yeah. I actually remember first seeing some of his videos a long time ago. A friend of mine had a VHS tape, and I don't know where he got it, but this was, you know, 10 or more years ago, and it was one of those copies of a copy type of thing. And he was excited about it, and I looked at it way back then, and I remember my first impression, you know, when I saw a lot of stuff falling up was, well, it's probably stuff falling down, and the camera's probably upside down.
I mean, yeah.
That's the most logical explanation.
Yeah.
So lately I've been, you know, looking at them again with fresh eyes. And again, I've been into video fakery. I love it. I used to play with magnets, and so you can definitely make things do weird movements when you're controlling them with magnets. I probably would, you know, first guys to figure out magnetism way back hundreds and hundreds of years ago or whenever could probably really, you know, freak out the rest of the people who
So could, is Red Bull Can is Red Bull Can another in the series?
Yeah, so, you know, that's in in segment four, and we can look at that. Now, this is a fairly recent one of John Hutchison's, and he's got...
you mean this is an actual Hutchison video?
This is, yeah, the first one that says Red Bull can, it's like a yellowish-colored room, and you see, like, pipes or whatever in the wall, and then there's a small Red Bull can there, sitting there, and then there's, I don't know what there is on the upper left-hand corner of the screen, it looks like, I don't know what it is, but anyway, yeah, let's look at his video.
Should we do a countdown?
3, 2, 1, hit it. And so he's got a blue screen, John Hutchison, Red Bull can experiment, November 2007. This is pretty recent, just a few months ago. And this is, it's pretty strange. Red Bull can, and it's it looks like it's sitting on the floor, and it's wiggling back and forth for no apparent reason. And it is bending, like the can is bending in the middle, and then it's just sort of hopped backwards. You know, that's weird. And again, it's sort of, you know, walking around and sliding around, but also it is a little hard to see. You know, it's YouTube, but the can itself is sort of bending, flexing in the middle, and the whole thing, when that's leaning over, now it's leaning over and, like, defying gravity. It's like hanging, well, it's like leaning almost all the way to the floor, but not quite. It's like just sort of hanging there, and then it's like bending in the middle. So this is some strange stuff. And it's, now the entire thing is rotating around the other way.
So you suspect magnets on the other side?
And then there it falls up, and then it flies around again.
Which might be falling down.
Right.
That window frame or whatever could be the top of a door rather than the bottom of a window frame. This is very curious, indeed. I'm going to have the fellow on tomorrow with Judy, so we'll be talking about his explanation. What do you take to be the explanation? What is supposed to be the Hutchison effect?
I was looking on his website, or on one of them. I think a few days ago. I think it's hutchisoneffect.ca, maybe. It's something like that. I'm sure they'll give it tomorrow.
Yeah.
I couldn't really find. I don't know exactly what his apparatus is, or what have you. I'm not sure. I mean, as near as I can understand it, he says that he's tapped into zero point energy, or something that perhaps Nikola Tesla discovered a long time ago, but it's been kept top secret. Which, by the way, I'll be the first to say that Tesla was a genius of unparalleled magic. And there is a lot of very strange, I mean, you know, Tesla, what? He invented the vacuum tube and discovered radio frequency and, invented alternating current and, the Tesla coil and a bunch of other stuff. All that was early in his life. And, the last decades of his life, he was doing something, and apparently all his notes and diagrams have sort of mysteriously disappeared. And
Tesla's.
Yeah, I do think that there might very well be something very powerful, very mysterious, that has been discovered and that has been kept secret. However, until something really strong comes along to change I do have to say that I think that Hutchison's videos are, I have a candidate for who I think actually is the originator of the Hutchison effect, and we'll get down to that maybe in the next segment. There.
Well, I just did a Google, and of course the first thing came up was a Wikipedia article on him saying that his effects have been proven difficult to replicate.
And, you know, of course, that's, you know, science, you know, you have to be able to replicate it, you know. That's why I've been trying to, you know, for example, replicate the positing and the nose out. I mean, I think I did that. I think I've shown...
Yeah, you recreated it. That's right.
how they do that. So, you know, it's tough for me. I mean, this is, you know, there's, you know, been no, you know, no bigger supporter certainly of Judy Wood's work than I. But I have to. I just feel compelled to offer whatever input, you know, that I can in my strongest area of expertise. And while I don't really know that much about quantum mechanics, I do know a thing or two about video.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Ace Baker. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. I must apologize to my audience for being under the weather. If you're hearing coughs and guffaws and so forth, I've had this stomach flu for the last several days, and it's really taken a lot out of me. My special guest today, as we continue, is Ace Baker, whom I consider to be quite brilliant and who does wonderful work as a composer, a musician, and a digital analyst. Ace, what should we do? We got a couple more here to look at.
Yeah, so we're at acebaker.blogspot, and then find Dynamic Duo segment 4. Hit that, and we looked at Hutchison's Red Bull can experiment, and so we can look at my Red Bull can experiment here that I did.
Okay.
And we'll count down into it here if you've got it.
Yep.
Ready to go. 3, 2, 1.
Got it.
And there's not a lot of loud sound at all, but you can definitely hear the can.
I hear the clock ticking. I see the can moving.
Yeah. So we see the can is tipping back and sort of balancing up on one edge, but we have a sense of continuous time. And sometimes the playback on YouTube can be glitchy, but the original video, certainly there's the second on the digital clock that you see there absolutely continuously, and the pendulum on the pendulum clock swings back continuously. So we'll notice that here in a minute the Red Bull can continues to wiggle, and pretty soon it's going to spontaneously start to become crushed. It goes on, you know, for a little while here. It took a while for the effect to start really kicking in. I was having a good time. Of course, here it's rotating. It's standing up and spinning around and rotating. Now you can see it's got a dent in it. And I don't know if you've got the sound up, you will hear.
I hear
these. You can hear it sliding around and.
Yeah.
And you can hear these deformations start to now. It just kind of popped
back. I see a slight deformation in the side.
Yeah, and it's going to continue on here. I think I might be like a little behind where you are, but and it gets worse and worse and more crushed here. Time continues to tick on. I was kind of having fun with it. And So it's gradually just going to get crushed, and at the very end, it falls up, and then it's going to come back down and the way I did this, the little blue house is hanging upside down, and I use some. Into the bottom of the Red Bull can. The Red Bull can is aluminum, I think, so it doesn't, you know, you can't hold it with a magnet, but I put some steel screws in there. And then so I'm in, above that, which, you know, in this video appears to be below the floor, but it's
right.
working that magnet, and when I would tip the magnet up on one side, that would make and sort of hang slightly sideways.
So this is a powerful enough magnet to cause the can to crunch?
No. No, not at all. So that I would just reach in every so often and just crush part of the can and then crush it some more and reach in and crush it some more. And then I just took and edited out all the parts where my hand was in. I just took those parts out. And the rest of them are real. It looks, the motion when you move it around, it's really strange. It almost looks like stop motion photography, but it's not. It almost looks like Gumby or something, the way it moves.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so the editing is sort of the left half, and the clocks keep going. I mean,
yeah. So now that started out as a completely separate video. I just shot video of the clocks on the floor, and at a downwards angle. And whereas the house and so forth, I've shot at an upwards angle. The lighting's very important for shooting that house. I made sure the light down low, so that when I flipped it upside down, it would look like the light was coming from above. And then it was a video composite. I put the two together, and I was able to mask off the edge of that little house. You can just go into this. I did this one in Final Cut Pro. You can just go and draw lines on the screen and say, this shape here, from this point to that point to this point to this point, you just mark points and say anything inside this shape become transparent. And so that little triangular area, that's all I did, just mask those off. But it's my, my little way of pointing out what's happening. And that is, first of all, sense of up and down, because a pendulum clock, of course, a pendulum won't work upside down, and then just continuous time. It's my way of proving, quote-unquote, proving that there's no edit because the little seconds on the digital clock keep time. But
right.
Of course, it's all fakery, and there's
well,
that's how I did it.
You've certainly given us a lot to think about, Ace. It'll be most interesting to have him and Judy on tomorrow to talk about his own work. The Wikipedia article is pretty skeptical, talking about the difficulty of even he himself being able to replicate his own phenomena. But I'm most curious, the effect has a cause. And I understand the cause of the effects you're presenting, which are not unusual, but merely, contrived. Does he have an explanation of what's supposed to cause his effects?
That's the question. As much as I can gather, he is somehow summoning up high amounts of energy. He says, in terawatts worth of energy. And I believe, I don't want to put any words in his mouth, I believe he's saying that he himself doesn't fully understand it. I've heard him say, that he doesn't know, he doesn't really know math or anything like that. So, that's fine. But it's apparently a subatomic, quantum mechanics, or somehow summoning up the ether or the zero point energy and harnessing it in ways that are can see, but that are very unpredictable and not able to make work every time.
Since he and Judy are going to be my guests tomorrow, I don't want to offer any preliminary opinions, but I'm fashioning them, and it will be most interesting to have a conversation with him about all this. In science, of course, when you're talking about relations between causes and effects, you have to be able to detect the presence or absence of the purported cause and the presence or absence of the purported effect to determine whether or not when you have the purported cause, you get the purported effect. And you try to refute the claim that there's a causal connection by seeing if you can have the purported cause present and the absence of the purported effect. What I am troubled by here is just the appearance of an effect with no obvious purported cause.
Right. Well, that's, we can look, the third one down here, and you can just, look at any part of it. It's a cute little video. There's a little toy UFO that's down there. And
okay, hang on. We'll come back to it. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Stand by with my special guest, Ace Baker. My special guest today has been Ace Baker, composer, musician, expert on digital processing, I'm kind of struck, Ace, that this thing I just printed off of Wikipedia, it says on the last page, this page was last modified on 27 February 2008 at 1655.
Oh.
That's about the time we're going on the air. It's being modified.
Yeah, well, don't know.
Very curious, very curious. Anyhow, yeah, you got another one we ought to look at here, another clip?
Yeah, there's another Hutchison one, and we're on acebaker.blogspot and on segment 4, and about the third video down, there's one, oops, you're supposed to crop out the string. Now, we have to look at this. Just hit play. We don't necessarily
know. Oh, segment 4.
That's from segment 4, yeah, about the third video down, a little YouTube. I just wrote, oops, you have to crop out the string. We see a little toy UFO.
I'm looking for the phrase, oops.
Oh, okay.
Do I need to refresh again?
Might need to reload that, yeah, if you loaded
okay.
it a while ago. I just stuck this one up there a while ago. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Taking me a second to reload.
Yeah.
I just hate to see that little colored wheel spinning around because I know I'm not in control.
It is. Rainbow Beach Ball of Doom.
Rainbow Beach Ball of Doom, yeah.
PC users have no clue what we're even talking about, probably. Little Macintosh thing. Yeah, it just means wait. Hurry up and wait. Yeah. I don't know,
but it's taking a little too long here.
Yeah, well, I'll go ahead and start it and just talk it down.
Yeah, I think you ought to do that just because I can't get it up. Go ahead.
We see, this is one of Hutchison's videos, and we see a room. On the left are panels of some kind of apparatus, knobs and dials and whatnot, but there's a little piece of plywood, and there's a little toy UFO, silver with a red, like, flashing light on top, and the UFO levitates. It's going up and down and spinning around. But the problem, unfortunately, is that on the upper left-hand part of the screen, you see a string.
This is even mentioned in Wikipedia.
There you go. Now that's the sound of power right there.
Well, but, I had to restart.
That'll probably work and get it going. But so there's this. You see the string on the left hand side of the picture, and you know somebody's yanking on the string, and every time the string yanks, the little UFO goes up, and then the string comes down, and the UFO comes down, and evidently, you know, this video is not on Hutchison's site anymore, but it was him. And I guess he was doing this one for some TV show. I mean, you could maybe ask him or whatever. But
Discovery.
So was that what it was?
Yeah, I think I was reading about it here in the Wikipedia article on him.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah, I hadn't seen that. In any case, there's... there's a darn string, you know, and you know, I mean, it's just, no, I'm sorry.
According to the article, he claimed it was a power supply.
Okay. looks to me like there's a string that then loops over a hook, and then it goes down, and it's probably... you know, black colored string or something that's attached to that UFO and then yanking the thing up and down. You know, maybe it's a power supply, but I don't know. It looks like he's yanking the thing on a string to me.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, his explanation.
Yeah. So I think actually I might have read somewhere that he originally said that it was part of his apparatus. It was a high voltage wire. And then later on, I believe it's my understanding that he actually admitted
okay.
that he had string, and what it was.
I just happened to go back to my email, and we got a question here from Judy, who wants to know if you could go to drjudywood.com/JJ. Okay, so drjudywood.com/article/JJ, two capital J's, /. And to view this video, And
which one is it?
I'm not quite sure which one she means, but it might be. It's supposed to be the water, something to do with the water. So.
Oh, the boat on the water?
Maybe it is. Yeah, let's look at the boat on the water.
Yeah, I have that one. Yeah.
Let's do the countdown and look at it together.
Okay. Yeah, I think I have that one on my channel as well.
Well, are you on Judy's site?
Let me get there. If it's the boat in the water one here.
Yeah, it's down below about, you know, more than a dozen images at the top. That's the first.
Yeah, I have it.
Okay, let's do a countdown.
Okay. So, 3, 2, 1, go.
Yeah.
You see a blue screen, Hutchison effect, boat on the water.
Actually, John Hutchison boat experiment, yeah.
We see water and we see a boat and we see...
it's a model of a ship, of course. This is a small... I used to make these plastic boats when I was a kid.
Right. So there's like three strange things about this video. One, the boat moves. How would that be? Well, we don't see the far right end of the boat is cropped out.
So yeah.
So somebody could be holding the end of the boat and moving it. And the second strange thing that we see is we see flames that appear to spontaneously come up around the back side and on the front side, and then they
flames.
Huh?
Flames, you're saying, or water?
Flames,
fire. So
there's like flames that appear on the boat.
Yeah. A
few different spots, and then there's
very very briefly though.
Very very briefly, and then within one frame they disappear, and in that exact same frame the water calms down. Well. That's an edit, what that's called. I believe the fire probably is real. It probably has like flash powder or something like that. But you light it and it burns, and you know you then edit out the parts where you reach in and light and you edit out the parts. But it clearly when the flames go out, the water cuts to a different shot. The vibration in the water is vibration. It's like a vibrating sander or some kind of a vibrator, and you vibrate the tub, and you can get these standing waves and these. You know. So I'll get on that one, and I'll make you a nice boat with some.
Well, I'm sure that I'll be on this page tomorrow with Judy and Hutchins, so it'll be most interesting to Hutchison to talk about this with them. You certainly. Prime the pump here in terms of stimulating interest about exactly what's going on here. Sure. This will be fascinating.
Back on my page, there's, in closing, just in case there's nobody that's ever seen it, one of the most wonderful pieces of video fakery ever done in the history of mankind was done in 1952, I believe. And the very last one on segment four, you can see it, was from a movie called A Royal Wedding. I'm sure you've seen it, but maybe there's some people...
Keith, I'm going to have you back, and I'm going to have you back soon, my friend, okay?
There you go.
Thank you so much for coming on. It's been fascinating. And everyone, stand by for tomorrow. We're going to have John Hutchison and Judy Wood on to discuss... their collaborative research. We'll see what's going on. Stand by. Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Special thanks to Ace Baker. Thank you all for listening. All right.